True peace is hard to come by. We aren't very good at handling conflict. Let's pray. We aren't very good at handling conflict, and when I say we, you can just kind of fill in that we however you'd like. We as a church, we as families, we as Christians, we as a society, we as living people in our modern culture and situation, or even just we as human beings, however you want to define we just aren't that good at handling conflict. Conflict comes in all kinds. I mean, we're still less than 100 years from the most devastating war in all of human history. And to some of us, like, that seems like a long time ago, but in the grand scheme of human history, that's not that long ago. And I understand that we have been living in a period more recently of unprecedented relative peace, but that's just it. It's relative peace, relative maybe to like World War II, but there's still violent conflicts that break out all over the world, and also it is unprecedented, meaning this is not common in human history. But like I said, conflict comes in all kinds. Despite the absence of war, we still don't have the presence of real peace. We have tension, disagreement, hostility, estrangement. Whatever your opinions about this, the rise of cancel culture should give us an indication that as people, we're not really getting much better at handling this whole conflict thing. And we don't need to point fingers out there. We can also just look at ourselves in here. Even just thinking about relationships that you and I would consider are on good terms. So these are like our good relationships. I wonder how many of us can immediately think of a subject or a topic, some kind of conversation that even in your good relationships, that topic, that subject, that conversation is off limits. You just can't go there, because if you go there, even in your best relationships, if you go there, it's going to be a fight. It's going to get icy. Tell me I'm not the only one in the room. It's okay to admit that we aren't very good at handling conflict, and yet conflict is a universal part of human experience. Almost everything I've ever read about handling conflict begins with the idea that conflict is inevitable. It's just part of everyone's life. Everything I've read, and listen, I've read quite a bit about conflict. I actually minored and conflict analysis and resolution in my undergraduate studies, which only made me cause more conflict by deceiving me into thinking I was good at it. True peace is hard to come by. But here's a question that maybe we should ask ourselves this morning. What difference does being a Christian make in all this? I mean, what difference does being a Christian make in all of this conflict? I mean, obviously, being a Christian doesn't insulate you from conflict. Obviously, being a Christian doesn't make you immune to conflict. I wish I could say that it makes you better at resolving it and living in true peace, but unfortunately, the reality is that sometimes Christians have been no better than anyone else when it comes to conflict. But church, we should be. We should be. At least according to Jesus, we should be. In fact, Jesus tells us that being a people who are marked, who are characterized by making peace is actually not just part of who we should be as Christians. Jesus says that's actually part of living the good life. Remember, here we are in these Beatitudes, these blessed are statements of Jesus, where Jesus is giving us his vision for human flourishing. He's giving us this vision for what the good life looks like, and part of that is our relationship to conflict and actually making peace in the relationships that we have in this world. He says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. If you've been here, you know that what we've been doing pretty much every week, we've been taking a moment at this point in time in our sermon to paraphrase what that beatitude means. We've been purposefully using more words than even the beatitude contains so that we can get a clear picture of exactly what it is that Jesus is communicating to us here. So this morning, what Jesus is saying is that the good life is one that is committed, absolutely committed to reconciling relationships and promoting peace wherever we can, just like our Father does with us. That's what Jesus is saying when he says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And listen, my hope this morning, I just want to say this up front, this is not like one of those 10 easy steps to resolve conflict more quickly in your life. No, this is a message about our convictions. This is a message about our identity, how we actually see ourselves in relationship to conflict and peace. And my hope this morning is that we would become convinced that we must live a life like this, but also by God's grace, that we can live a life like this. So to do that, I want to just ask a handful of questions this morning. The first one I want to ask is about even this whole idea of peace. Blessed are the peacemakers. So what is peace that is contained in this statement about peacemaking? What is true peace? Well, in the Bible, and even here, I think in Jesus' own mind, peace is the presence of wholeness and well-being. Wholeness and well-being with God, with one another, and even within ourselves. And I think you and I, probably, we have a tendency to define peace more so as the absence of something. I think when you and I tend to think about peace, we tend to think of peace as merely the absence of conflict. So as long as there's no active, like really intense, hostile situations kind of coming at us, then I guess we must have peace. But biblically speaking, you know, peace is a much bigger category than that. It's not just the absence of something. Peace in the Bible is actually the presence. It's the active experience and presence of something. And throughout all these Beatitudes, what we've seen is that Jesus is consistently just drawing on these Old Testament themes. The same is true here. Peace is one of the biggest themes that runs right through the whole Bible. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew word for peace is the word you might have heard before. It's the word shalom. The idea of shalom, as we've said, it's this active presence or this sense of wholeness and completeness and well-being. It's about experiencing a sense of harmony all around you. Those who experience shalom or true peace experience a sense of harmony, not just that things aren't wrong, but that things are right, and things are right in multiple dimensions. Things are right between you and God. Things are right between you and other people and the relationships of the people who are around you. And things are right even into yourself, even with your own relationship with yourself. As you see yourself in this world, there's a sense of peace and harmony and wholeness and completeness. That's what the Bible means when it refers to this idea of peace. And as a family, we sometimes like to do jigsaw puzzles, you know, like with the box, and it has the picture on the outside. It's like 500 pieces or 1,000 pieces, and we kind of get together, we put it all together as a family. I say sometimes, only sometimes, especially when we're on vacation. Usually we all start together, but my wife Katie is the one that typically finishes it. And I remember one time I thought it would be clever if in the early parts of doing one of these puzzles, I thought it would be clever if I pocketed one of the pieces. So that at the end, it would seem like there was a piece missing, and I would be the only one who had it. Like I already told you, I'm not as good at conflict as I once thought. You can imagine how disrupting it felt to come to the end and have that one missing piece. That's like the whole point of doing a puzzle, is to put that last piece in and like just like a step back and go, oh, like there's a sense of wholeness and completeness. Everything's right. Friends, that is a small picture. It's a small picture of this idea of true peace as wholeness and harmony and completeness, but it also illustrates how easy it is to disrupt. Sometimes all it takes is one small missing piece. And we all know that, don't we? All it takes is just one simple relational breakdown to disrupt everything about anything that we would describe as wholeness and completeness and harmony. Sometimes all it takes is just one other personality. I mean, never your personality, some other personality to disrupt our harmony. Sometimes all it takes is one word. Sometimes all it takes is one word in the wrong tone. Listen, when we have unresolved conflict or tension with other people, it begins to disrupt our harmony, obviously, not just because we now have disruptions and disagreements and hostility and conflict with other people, but it actually even begins to disrupt our inner harmony, again, not even just because of them. It begins to disrupt how we even see ourselves. When we are in conflict with other people, it inevitably affects the way in which we see ourselves, even the way in which we look at ourselves in the mirror. Listen, the reality is that we can't have an understanding of ourselves that is not in some way shaped and influenced by our understanding of how other people see and interact with us. And ultimately, if there is conflict between us and God, we have no shot at experiencing true peace. I mean, unresolved conflict in any relationship will disrupt our harmony. Unresolved conflict between us and God is more than just like a puzzle piece missing. It's two now, I did that. It's more than just like a puzzle piece missing. It's like missing the entire frame. It's like missing the entire border around. Like, listen, if you don't do puzzles, you just need to know this, right? Like, there's one right way to do a puzzle. Now I'm going to create conflict with people who don't do puzzles this way, but like, there's one right way to do a puzzle. You do the outside first, because that gives you a lay of the land, and everything else hangs on that. Our relationship with God, that is what He is like. We need to have peace there in order to have order and goodness and peace and harmony and wholeness and completeness in our life. And so without that, any kind of conflict we have with Him, and listen, it doesn't even need to be a sense in your heart where you feel like you have outright rebellion against Him, even though the Bible often describes us that way. But like I said, conflict has many names. Maybe it's just tension. Maybe it is anger and hostility, or maybe it's just estrangement. If we have any kind of conflict or estrangement or tension with God, we're never going to be able to experience any kind of true peace, which means we're never going to be able to give it away either. So where does this peace come from? How can we get this peace? The second thing I want us to see this morning is that true peace can only come from God. Look, I'm not just saying that because it's true or even just generally true in the Bible. That's actually being implied right here by Jesus in this beatitude. He says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." Right? Like, what is the connection between that? Like, what's the connection between making peace and being called sons of God? This entire beatitude actually hangs on understanding that connection. Listen, folks, Jesus is not saying that if you make peace, that if you're just like skilled at this, or if you have a natural disposition that makes you better at this, which, by the way, there's no such thing, we'll get to that later. But if you just do this kind of thing, if you're out there building peace and making peace, if you do that, God will actually adopt you as a child of his. That is not what this saying, what this is saying. That would run contrary to the entire fabric and tapestry of grace that is being portrayed in all of these beatitudes, and it would miss the beauty of what Jesus is saying here. In the world in which Jesus lived and taught, you didn't decide what your job was. That's what Jesus is getting at here. He's actually getting at occupation. Right? Like in that world, whatever your father was, that's what you were, right? If your father was a carpenter, guess what? You're a carpenter. If your father was a farmer, you were a farmer. And yes, there were exceptions, but that was so much a part of life that it became like a saying. So that if you were particularly good at something, someone would call you a son of that thing because you were so good at doing that job. In fact, that's why Jesus in the Gospel of John, he calls the Pharisees sons of the devil. He says that because they're lying. They're not upholding and speaking and teaching the truth. Now, like, obviously, the devil wasn't their literal daddy. But they were so good at distorting the truth that Jesus says, oh, you must be sons of Satan because that's what his job is. And friends, in a positive way, that's what Jesus is saying here in the act of peacemaking itself. First and foremost, peacemaking is a reflection of God because this is God's job. This is what God does. This is what God loves to do. God is the ultimate peacemaker. And he does that first and foremost with us. God makes peace with us, and he does that in the person of his son Jesus. Listen to what it says in Colossians chapter 1. Beginning of verse 19, it says this, for in him, this is referring to Christ, in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. All the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in the person of Christ and through him, through Christ, to reconcile to himself, to reconcile to God all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. He reconciles us to himself. He makes peace between us and himself. He brings us together, two parties that are apart, that are estranged, where there's tension and hostility between us, namely because of our sin and our rejection of God, which he has a clear and an undeniable record of. So there's this tension, but he makes the first move. He moves towards us in order to restore us to him and bring about peace between us and him. And the cross is the ultimate peacemaking instrument, the peacemaking work that God gets done on the cross through Jesus shedding his blood as a sacrificial payment for our sins that erases any record of wrong that might exist between us and God, so that anyone who might look at the ways in which we rebel against God and don't do what God wants us to do or do things that we know God does not want us to do, anyone who can look at that and say, wait, there's tension, there's conflict, there's a problem here, God can say, no, there's not, not anymore, not for anyone who has trusted in my son and the work that I have accomplished on the cross through him. The cross is God's way of saying, there is no more hostility between us. And so we're reconciled. There's a sense of relational wholeness and well-being that exists between us and him. So he makes peace between us and himself, but it also results in, it accomplishes, it affects a relational peace that we can have with one another. The effects of that cross for all who believe, for all who trust in the peacemaking cross work of Christ, is that we can actually be reconciled with each other and have peace between us. You actually can't separate these things. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians. He's writing to a church that is made up of Jews and Gentiles, Jews and non-Jews, people of the nations, two groups that had experienced centuries of historical, religious, cultural, and personal hostility, and even at times, at many times, violence between each other. Together in one church. And Paul says, in light of the cross, he says this. He says, for he himself is our peace. He who made us both one, who has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace. And might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. He came and preached peace to you who were far off and peace to those who were near. Friends, the message of a cross, of the cross, is a message of reconciling peace that brings us together in one body as one new people together. Friends, the cross is not only the power of God to reconcile us to him, but it's the power of God to reconcile us and give us real peace. I mean, just think about it like this for a moment. I mean, imagine for a moment that you have a conflict, a real conflict. Let's say another member of our church. There's tension, there's hostility, there's distance. But how could any of us ever say, you know what? I can't ever be reconciled to that person. I could never be brought back close to that person. I could never forgive them. I could never break down the wall of hostility that exists between us. I could never make the first move towards them when the God of the universe, a being of infinite power and glory and goodness and righteousness, if he can erase the hostility that exists between rebel sinners and himself, and if he, the one who did no wrong, the one who's the offended party, if he can make the first move and move toward us, and if he can wipe away at great cost to himself any hostility that exists, how could you and I ever possibly say that we can't be reconciled? Listen, the same is true when it comes to the peace that we have within ourselves. Not just peace that we have within ourselves because of our relationship with God and other people, but even the peace that we have within ourselves about ourselves. And listen, I'm not trying to overly psychologize this, but this is part of what it means to be a peacemaker. You cannot give away what you do not have. Some of us have a hard time living at peace, even with ourselves. And we even say things like, no, I understand how God could forgive me. I understand how this other person can forgive me, but I can't let myself off the hook. And sometimes that can sound like actually like religious and spiritual. It can almost sound like you have like a really high view of God and all that, but listen, that's not actually a high view of God. That's actually a lower view of God. He's not just high and lifted up and exalted and mighty. His goodness exists in that he loves to make peace with rebels. And if he can look at you, if he can look at you and say, there is no hostility between us, peace. Why can't we look at ourselves and say, peace? I know I'm not perfect. I know I've sinned. I know I've wronged others. But by the grace of God, because of the peace that I have with him, I can live at peace with myself. I asked the question at the outset this morning, what difference does being a Christian make in all of this, in this whole world of conflict and peace? Friends, it should make all the difference in the world. Not that we're experts by any stretch, but you cannot become a Christian without walking through the door of reconciliation. To be a Christian, just definitionally, to be a Christian is to begin by having a profound personal experience with conflict resolution with God himself. So of course, we of all people should be marked by a particular sensitivity, by a particular commitment, by an ability even to resolve conflict and make true peace. So what does that mean? In light of the fact that true peace is this bigger thing, this sense of harmony and wholeness and completeness, in light of the fact that can only come from God, but he loves to give it, what does it mean to be a peacemaker? Well, a peacemaker is someone who has been reconciled to God and is now committed to promoting peace as part of your identity. That's why Jesus is using identity language. He doesn't say, blessed are those who have experienced peace. No, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. I mean, both halves of that have identity language. It's not just blessed are those who have been given it. They are peacemakers as those who have been reconciled to God, as those who have been adopted by God entirely of his grace. We are to see ourselves as being like him by being committed to being peacemakers. So listen, more than anything else, what Jesus is getting at here is a conviction. This is really important. We can't move past this part this morning. Like I said earlier, this isn't like seven steps to quicker conflict resolution in your life. In fact, Jesus is not even really saying anything about strategies at all. He wants us to start with a conviction about our identity as people who are committed to making peace. And let me just clarify this. Sometimes I think when we hear this, we hear this peacemaking language, we have the wrong idea in our mind. Sometimes we think about peacekeeping. Like people who are just afraid to kind of ruffle other people's feathers, people who just kind of like tend to sweep things under the carpet. I mean, sometimes we hear this and we think Jesus is just calling us to be pushovers, to be people who are just kind of nice to everybody else. Friends, that's not what this is talking about. Jesus is not calling us to mere peacekeeping. He's not calling us to peace faking. In fact, especially in light of what true peace is, friends, you can't bring about true peace through falsehood. You can't bring about true peace through pretending. Now, this isn't peace at any cost. This certainly isn't peace at the cost of truth. But this is peace even at great cost. Even at great energy and effort on our part. Like I think probably the simplest way to say it at the end of the day, to be a peacemaker, is to put peacemaking in its proper priority in our lives. In fact, I wonder right now if I were to ask you, like, where do you think peacemaking fits in the overall priority that we should have in our lives? Like, maybe you're thinking, okay, I guess it should probably be pretty close to the top, but there's going to be other things that have higher priorities than peacemaking, right? Actually, no. Believe it or not, peacemaking is actually at the very, very top of all our priorities. And listen, we're going to talk more about this later in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is going to come back to this theme again and again. Some of those times, he's going to become a little bit more practical. But listen to what he says later on in Matthew chapter 25. This is what Jesus has to say about the relationship of peacemaking to our priorities and even the priority of our worship. He says in Matthew chapter 25, verse 23, if you are offering your gift at the altar, the picture is the person who has come up to the temple, to the presence of God, to worship. He has brought gifts and offerings and sacrifices to make on the altar. He's saying, if you're there and there, like even in that moment, if you remember that your brother has something against you. Notice that. It doesn't say if you remember that you have something against your brother. He says, if you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Listen, friends, I don't think this is what you and I would have probably expected Jesus to say. Like, if you could sit down with Jesus and say, hey, what is number one on my top priorities, you'd probably expect him to say, like, oh, and like worship, and especially worship between you and God. Like, the first thing you ought to do is, like, bring your offering to God, do that piece, do the vertical piece, and then go and settle the horizontal. But Jesus doesn't say that. And listen, don't misunderstand this. Jesus is not saying that your relationships with other people are more important than your relationship with him. He's not saying that. He's actually not saying, forego worship, go build relationship, and then come back and worship. No, he's actually saying, don't engage in the merely external acts of worship if you are neglecting the internal aspect of worship, which is to identify when you have conflict and tension with other people. He says, first, go, be reconciled. That actually is part of your worship. Go and do that part of your worship, the part that requires real deep personal reflection and engagement on you and your sin and your relationships with other people. Go and do that part of worship and then come and resume this external part of worship. In other words, what Jesus is saying is be the kind of people who recognize that because of your actions, your words, the way in which you've engaged in relationship and conversation with other people, pay attention to that. Recognize when you may have hurt somebody else, when somebody else might have something against you, whether they are fully justified or not. And be the kind of person that just like stops everything else to go and first be reconciled. There are certain kind of people out there. I actually envy them because I have to be honest, I'm not that way. There are kinds of people out there when they see something wrong on their house, they drop everything right away and fix it. Like you come home, and you notice there's like a leaky faucet, it's like dripping, like you will drop everything and like get the tools out and fix that leaky faucet before anything else happens. So like others of us, we're like, oh, it hasn't broken anything yet. Like nothing's damaged. Like we're gonna wait. We're gonna wait until the absolute last moment before like we fix that thing. Or like some of you are the kind of people who are like, if you go to bed at night and you're lying there in bed and all of a sudden you remember that someone left a light on in the basement, you will get up out of bed to go shut off that light bulb. Like, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not that kind of person. Like, I'm just, like, I'm staying in bed. Like the basement, that's, like, a lot of steps, and you're in bed. Like, that light can stay on. I'll pay the electricity. I'll take care of it tomorrow, I hope, if I remember, right? But some of you, it's like you can't do anything else until you know the leak is fixed or the light bulb is off. Friends, that's what Jesus means when he says, blessed are the peacemakers. That's what he means when he's calling us to peacemaking, is to be the kind of people who recognize when something's wrong and we get after it immediately. Even if that means getting out of bed and dealing with it right away. That's what it means to be a peacemaker. And listen, don't forget in all of this, God is not saying that you simply just better do this. He's saying that this is the good life. This is actually the way to be happier. This is actually the way to experience human flourishing. So lastly, just very briefly, I've got to address this. How can we do this? How can we actually begin to make peace? This will be simple. Friends, the best way to begin to be a peacemaker is simply to pay attention to your life. Pay attention to your life. I mean that in a few ways. One way that actually hit me this week was kind of unexpected, but pay attention to what it is that you consume. Especially pay attention to the kinds of information and media you consume, especially the volume and the tone and the tenor of the primary news that you consume. In fact, I actually got a message from one of my news sources this week warning me about itself. Listen, if you ingest information and media that is constantly ruffling you, that is constantly making you uneasy about yourself and the people around you, if you are consuming news that is making you less trustworthy of other people, that is making you more suspicious of other people, if you are just constantly listening to news that is characterized by argument and ill will towards other people, like even if it's not like political news and world news, like even sports news is like this. Like people put out these like topics and all they do is just like argue and shout at each other. If you are constantly ingesting that, that is going to have an effect on you. So, like, pay attention to that. Notice that and consume things, ingest things that are going to help your own heart to have peace. They're going to help your heart to assume the best of other people. That are going to help your heart to be gracious and patient and gentle and kind towards other people so that you can be ready to be at peace. But that's just one way. And look, obviously, this is meant to be deeper than that. Now, you need to pay attention to your life in a much deeper way. You need to pay attention to how your natural disposition influences the way in which you engage in conflict. So I want to be clear about this, right? Nobody's disposition makes them naturally a good peacemaker. Every one of us has a disposition that in some way will work against our effective peacemaking. You just need to pay attention to your life to know which particular disposition pulls you in which particular way. And Ken Sandy talks a great deal about this in his book, The Peacemaker. By the way, speaking of ingesting things, like one great thing to do if you want just a practical help in all this, you want to be a better peacemaker, go and read the book called The Peacemaker. Like, we have it in our bookstall. In fact, not only would I recommend that you read it, I would recommend that you read it and just put like a little notice on your calendar, like every year or every other year, to read it again. I read much of it this week. And it is effective in reminding me, and I hope effective in reminding you about just how bad we all are at conflict. But in this book, he characterizes how our disposition leads us away or contributes to conflict. And some of us have dispositions that make us want to avoid conflict. He calls this the escape response. Right? And you probably know who you are if this is you, but again, you're the one that you don't want to bring anything up. You don't want to ruffle feathers. And so because of that, you're even though people do things that hurt your feelings, and even though you see other people engaging in activities that you know aren't good for them, you just kind of want to, I don't want to say anything, so I don't want to keep the peace. That's actually that's an escape response that pushes you away from not just conflict, but pushes you away from resolution and experiencing real peace. If you go back to that puzzle picture, if one piece missing ruins our sense of peace, but this is how you relate all the time over and over again as a pattern, imagine how multiple pieces missing will affect the peace that we have in our lives. Now, some of you are like, yeah, that's right. You tell those people who are always trying to avoid conflict. Well, guess what? You contribute to conflict just as much. You just contribute to conflict on the other side, because your disposition makes you gravitate towards conflict. You're the ones that you tend to think that you're better at it because you're always going after it. You're always wanting to hold people's feet to the fire. You think, we're not going to let this conflict fester. We're going to go after it. We're going to attack it. That's what Ken Sandy calls the attack responses. Again, friends, every one of us leans in one direction or another. The reality is that some of us might lean in different directions in different times based on the situation or the people, but the only way that you'll know is if you pay attention and purposefully, by God's grace, move in a different direction of your disposition. There's another area we need to pay attention to. I know I've got to wrap this thing up, but I think this is important. We need to pay attention to the people that God has providentially brought into our lives. Look, let's just be honest here. Some people just rub us the wrong way. Like, just, can I get an amen in the room? Like, some people they just rub us the wrong way. But there's something that you need to remember. You probably are that person for somebody else. And I'll just say in the present moment that I realize that I might be that person for you. And if that's the case, I can only imagine how challenging it would be to have me as your pastor. I would simply ask that you would have grace with me, forgive me, and move towards me, have a conversation with me. And I'll tell you, if there's anything I can do in sincerity and in honesty and in good faith to help with that, I will, or I'll do my best. But listen, there's two things. There's two things that every good peacemaker does. First, peacemakers make the first move. Even if you're the offended party, even if what the other person has done is more wrong in your mind than what you think, peacemakers always make the first move, just like God has done with us. But here's the thing. That first move is always first inward. As Jesus says, take the log out of your own eye and then go. In every situation, there's always room to begin for you to consider what you have done. And as you then go and make the first move, you can disarm the whole situation by being the first one to say, I'm sorry. Friends, that's what peacemakers do. And all of this, friends, all of this is really just a reflection of the life of all the Beatitudes being born out by God in our lives. As the those who are poor in spirit, who mourn our sin, who seek to be meek, who don't get offended too easily, who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And as God fills us, we're merciful to other people. And as God gives us pure hearts, we move out into the world as peacemakers. So in the spirit of paying attention to our lives, let's respond this morning with some silent reflection before we come to the Lord's table. It's a simple question. Where do you need to make peace in your life?